Thank you very much, Rebbe. Thank you for your two kind words. The one part I will agree with is I did get up early to come here, but it was an opportunity I wouldn't miss. It's a tremendous cover to be here with Rosh Hashanah, and again, to be here in Chicago again. What time do you have till 11? So just the topic that we were asked to discuss here a little bit, the topic of Lashon Hara in the internet age, I think that second part of the phrase suggests that the boundaries have kind of changed in this era. That we have a glut of information, we're exposed to things from all different corners, and at the same time we also recognize, as is relevant to the topic that Rosh Schwartz discussed, that sometimes the needs of society to know things that are going on have also expanded. So we have pressures coming from, information coming from all over. We have sometimes the feeling that it's justifiable to seek out information that we wouldn't have sought out perhaps previously. And it's worth looking at some of the concepts, some of the themes of how Lashon Hara is portrayed in the literature to try to have a little bit of a framework, try to have a little bit of an understanding. And here too, it's a question really where we can't talk in specifics, but there's always going to be variables in each and every case, but it's worth looking a little bit at the framework, a little bit of the background to what's involved in addressing some of these questions. And before doing that, I'd like to start perhaps with a point of drush, really a question on Rashi. So, Rashi in the beginning of Parsha Shlach, we read a few months ago, Rashi notes the juxtaposition. The parasha begins with the story of the Meraglim, and it picks up immediately from the end of Baal Oscha. The end of Baal Oscha, we read about the story of Miriam. Miriam, who is afflicted with tzaras because she speaks Lashon Hara about her brother Moshe. So Rashi tells us it's not a coincidence that this is here in order to make a point. That here, look, Miriam, she spoke badly about her brother, about Moshe, and she's punished. And immediately afterwards, we have the story of the spies. They should have learned the lesson, says Rashi, quoting from Chazal. They should have picked up the message that just as what she did was wrong and she got punished, so too they should have learned not to act the way they did, speaking badly about the land of Israel. And it's a difficult Rashi to understand because as much as we obviously venerate the land of Israel, the connotation that we have there that it's kind of a kal vachomer, as if what Miriam did was bad, what the Meraglim did was worse. There's somehow a progression there that they should have learned the lesson from what she did. It's a little bit difficult because as holy as Eretz Yisrael is, it's still not a person with feelings or emotions. And Moshe is a human being. So it would seem that it would be worse to speak about a person than to speak about the land. And this implication that there's kind of a kal vachomer, that somehow what they did was worse than what she did, is difficult to understand. And you don't have to take my word for it. It's actually a statement in the Talmud. The Talmud in the Maseches Erechin, which is where many of the topics of Lashon Hara are presented and referred to a couple of times, actually says the opposite. The Gemara says, how do you know that it's bad to speak about people? Because look at the Meraglim. The Meraglim spoke about, as we say, Eitzim V'Avonim, sticks and stones about inanimate objects, about the land. And they were punished. So it must be much worse to actually speak about people who have feelings. So the Gemara already tells us that really the kal vachomer would go in the other direction. So that's a question to think about as we progress. And what is Rashi getting at? Why is Rashi apparently implying that what the Meraglim did, they should have learned the lesson from Miriam? It sounds like what they did was worse. So try to look at this question a little bit. It's really a conceptual question that one could ask about the whole nature of a prohibition such as Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara, taken as a mitzvah, taken as a prohibition, it's a little bit complex to try to categorize. What do we mean when we say there's a prohibition of Lashon Hara? On the one hand, it sounds like an action, an aveira, a prohibition like all the other prohibitions in the Torah. On the other hand, it's also a character trait. We talk of a Baal Lashon Hara, we talk about somebody who has a tendency to gossip, to speak badly about others. And it opens the possibility that when the Torah prohibits Lashon Hara, specifically the language that we find in Parshas Kedoshim, Lo Seleich Rachel, you shouldn't walk around as a talebearer, that maybe we're not even prohibiting a specific action, but we're prohibiting a character trait. Maybe we're saying, you should not be a gossipy, nasty person. You shouldn't be someone who likes to indulge in negativity and to talk badly about others. So maybe the Torah is addressing a character trait. And this really touches upon what could be a philosophical argument that you find in the Rishonim a little bit. You have to analyze the Rishonim to come to this conclusion. We won't go into all these details, but just briefly, tangentially touch upon it. Could be there are them who have suggested that the Rambam, for example, Maimonides, has an approach where he assumes the Torah has to address actions. That mitzvos have to have demonstrable behaviors. And even though there are sometimes character traits or emotions that we are trying to evoke or that we're trying to transform, that happens indirectly because the Torah has to have mitzvos, commandments that we can observe, do's and don'ts. So we have actions, we have specifics, and indirectly they affect who we are, they affect how we feel, they affect what's inside. This is a concept, for example, here we're standing in Elul. So the Rambam has a language that when we have a mitzvah of tshuva, the mitzvah of tshuva, it sounds like he's saying it's not really the mitzvah to do tshuva, there's a mitzvah to do vidui, to confess. And the Soloveitchik explained that really the mitzvah is, of course, tshuva, is, of course, an inner transformation of tshuva. But tshuva is internal, it's somewhat ephemeral, and therefore we have to have an action that brings that about. And that action is the vidui, the confession that we do, that provokes us to change. So this is consistent with an approach you find in the Rambam in many places, that there are actions that we command, do's and don'ts, and they indirectly affect who we are on the inside. And there are others, perhaps Rabbeinu Yonah, who would maintain that no, it's not inconceivable that the Torah would address a personality trait. The Torah would say, be this type of person and don't be that type of person. And therefore, it could be that when it comes to something like Lashon Hara, so the Torah is telling us, don't be a nasty gossip, don't be a person who likes to engage in this type of discussion, this type of conversation. Maybe we don't necessarily have to address a specifically formulated type of action. Okay, so what difference does it make? I could say one way, I could say a different way. I could formulate this as an action or as a quality trait. Does it make a difference? So I'd like to look at a few cases where maybe it does make a difference, and which maybe gives us some perspective on how these concepts interact with each other. For example, there is a certain loophole that the Talmud mentions. Again, this is in the middle of Maseches Erechin, which is where the sugyas of Lashon Hara are presented. So the Gemara tells us about an exception to the laws of Lashon Hara. Before we get too excited, it's a very limited exception. It sounds very broad. If you look at the later Svarim, they limit it tremendously. But it's also those who are in Yeshiva University, so in Bava Basra this year, the sugi appears in Bava Basra as well, in Cheskos Abatim. The Gemara tells us there's an exception to the laws of Lashon Hara. Anything that is public knowledge defines public knowledge with the phrase ape tlasa. Ape tlasa meaning in front of three, under the assumption that if three people know about something, so essentially the whole world knows. Because your friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a friend who has a neighbor, who has a cousin, who has a dog walker, who has a barber, who has an uncle, who knows somebody else. So essentially if three people know, so the whole world knows. So that's considered to be public knowledge. So something that's public knowledge, says the Talmud, there's no prohibition of Lishna Bishta, it's Aramaic for Lashon Hara. It's apparently permissible to repeat something which is public knowledge. And there's a debate among the Rishonim what exactly qualifies. A lot of intricacies to that topic, so don't try this at home too quickly. A lot of limitations on this idea. But in theory, so we have this concept, it sounds like if something is public knowledge, so I'm permitted to talk about it. In addition to all the other limitations, so there is a very significant difference, a very significant limitation that's imposed by Tosfos on the side of the page over there in there. Apparently, it's a little bit of a question how to read it. But Tosfos seems to limit this tremendously. Says Tosfos, this idea that you can speak Lashon Hara if it's already well known, we're not talking about bad Lashon Hara. We're only talking about good Lashon Hara. Good Lashon Hara sounds like a contradiction in terms. Lashon Hara, by definition, is bad. What is good Lashon Hara? So good Lashon Hara would be, for example, one of the greatest things I could say about somebody, speaking personally, one of the best things I could say about somebody, so I had a great steak at his house last night for dinner. Now, as wholly positive as that is, if I would tell people this, so I might not be doing him a favor. He's going to sit down the next night to what he would hope would be a quiet meal or a quiet steak dinner at his house. And 5 minutes in, there'll be a knock at his door. It's my friend Reuven. Yeah, I was just in the neighborhood. It was at steak. Finds himself invited in. 5 minutes later,
So Shimon and Levi also walking by. That's David. Pretty soon he finds that the small steak he had for himself is being shared with the whole town. So here, this is positive. And yet, he'd rather I didn't tell him that. So Tosfos says, when you're allowed to repeat positive things, we're not talking about negative Lashon Hara. You're allowed to repeat those things that would fall in this category of Lashon Hara. These things which are essentially positive, but still could have been damaging. So if everybody knows already, you can repeat them. So that's a big difference. So if you read the Gemara by itself, in the way some of the Rishonim understand, it sounds like if something is well known, even if it's negative, you're allowed to repeat it. And here Tosfos comes and says, no, if it's negative, you can't say it at all. It's only repeatable if it's both well known and positive. Positive with a technical prohibition, if it's well known, it becomes repeatable. So what's the difference between these two perspectives? So one could suggest that the Talmud taken by itself is telling us that there is a specific format to the prohibition of Lashon Hara. We're not looking at quality traits, we're not looking at personalities, we're looking at a specific active definition. We're talking about hurting someone through speech. The Lashon Hara is taken to be an act of damaging people, and you're not allowed to hurt somebody through your words, or put them at risk through your words. So therefore, if you want to say something nasty, if it's already well known, so you're not doing any damage because people already know what it is you're saying, and we're assuming, of course, that it's only within the circles where it's already known. So then, yes, it's still nasty, it's still not a nice way to talk, it's still not an exalted character trait, but it may not fall into the definition of the action of what's called Lashon Hara. While perhaps Tosfos is interested in the quality of being a gossip. And Tosfos is saying, I don't care if everybody knows. I don't care if you're not adding to the damage of the person you're talking about. To indulge in this kind of conversation is still inappropriate. And the only time we'll permit it is if it's both not damaging because everyone knows, and it's also positive. It also doesn't reflect any type of a negativity, any type of a nastiness, then we'll permit it. So perhaps that difference in Rishonim and how to understand this concept of public knowledge, what you can talk about when it's public knowledge, perhaps reflects already this issue that either we can see Lashon Hara purely as an action, damaging people through speech, or we could see it as a quality trait and we're looking into a broader sense to prohibit any type of indulging in this kind of negativity. Make sense so far? Another example where you may find this issue is a correlate prohibition to Lashon Hara. There is a prohibition, which you could call the it takes two to tango rule. This is known as Kabbalah's Lashon Hara. Not only are we not allowed to say Lashon Hara, we're also not allowed to receive Lashon Hara. The problem is, it's much harder to define what that means to receive Lashon Hara. You tell me not to speak Lashon Hara, what does it mean not to receive? Now, it would be simple if the way the world worked is that when somebody wants to tell you Lashon Hara, so they come up to you and they say, good morning, I'm interested in telling you some Lashon Hara revenue. Do you elect to receive or reject? So then you could push the reject button. You don't open the email, whatever it is. But it rarely happens that way, less than half the time. Right? Most of the time, when somebody's talking to you, so then halfway in, you realize that they said something maybe you didn't want to hear. So now, what does it mean not to be Mekadeh Lashon Hara? So this issue, there is a literature on. Chafetz Chaim, the classic authority on this topic, so Chafetz Chaim understands that this really means that you're not allowed to believe what you've heard in your heart of hearts at all. If you have to protect yourself, if it's something that is relevant to some kind of danger to yourself or others, then you have to act on that in that sense. But even then, it's interesting, based on the Gemara, you don't have to actually believe it still. You have to act on it, protect yourself, which the Gemara has expression, Masechus Nidah v'Meichush, that you have to take into account the possibility that it might be true, and therefore act to protect yourself and others. But in your heart of hearts, you don't believe it. You believe it's not true. It's not relevant to protection, then for sure you don't believe it at all. That was the approach of Chafetz Chaim. It's a contemporary posek, a well-known Mechaber Svarim by the name of Rav Moshe Shternbach. Rav Moshe Shternbach, in his Tshuvas, he takes issue with this psak of the Chafetz Chaim. He says the Chafetz Chaim was a very holy man. He's on a different level than the rest of us. Torah lo nitna l'malcha asharis, the Gemara says, the Torah wasn't given to angels. You have a friend who's always told you the truth for the past 30 years. He tells you something about somebody else. You know he's always told you the truth. You know that what he's telling you now is true also. you don't really have the ability to just turn on and off what you're going to believe and what you're not going to believe. So therefore, it says Rav Sherpa, I have to assume that the prohibition means that you can't act on what you've heard. That you can't let somebody be hurt based on what you were told. So even if you believe it in your heart of hearts, even if intellectually you think it's true, still, again, assuming it's not relevant to protection of yourself or others, so you're not going to treat the person any differently. I tell you something about somebody's past that was something you did 20 years ago, you're not going to stop talking to him in the lunchroom, you're not going to stop saying good morning to him, you're not going to treat this person any differently because of what you did. So it seems that you have this issue playing out here as well, that maybe the Chafetz Chaim here is assuming that we're dealing with a prohibition of egos, a prohibition of personality traits that you shouldn't talk in a nasty way. And therefore, the correlate is you shouldn't engage in that intellectually either. You shouldn't listen to it. You shouldn't partake in the gossip by believing it. While perhaps Sternbach is understanding a little bit more of an actual active type of damage concept, that you can't talk badly about people because you may hurt them, you may cause them problems. And therefore, your job as the one who's potentially listening is to not let that damage take place. So if you heard this information, you're not going to let the person be hurt through the fact that you receive the information. You may know it, you may believe it, maybe you believe it 100%, but you're not going to act on it in any way that's going to let this person be damaged again, excluding cases where it's going to be relevant to protection of yourself or not. So perhaps this machlokas, this debate between them, again, reflects this issue. I saw once a tshuva which may also reflect this issue, a very funny kind of tshuva, a strange type of situation. Obvious, this is not the real example. Let's say I were to walk into this room right now. I come from New Jersey, I don't know anybody in Chicago. So I come in here and I say, this is the first person I see. I have some very juicy Lashon Hara that I have to share about losing your mind. I don't know who you are. You're the first person I see when I come into the room. Can I please tell you my Lashon Hara? So what's Rabbi Brand to do? So here, he's confronted with somebody actually saying, I'm going to speak Lashon Hara now. But the twist is, it's about him. So he has two choices. This was a discussion in the Shilas and Tshuvas, Tirosh and Yitzhak. He discusses that he has two options. Really, he has three options. The first option is he can say, hello, I'm Roy Grant. But we assume he's such a tzaddik, he's not going to do that. That's going to embarrass me too much. He's not going to take that path. So he has two other options. One option is he could say, sorry, I'm not interested in Lashon Hara. You actually told me you're going to speak Lashon Hara. I can't listen. Sorry. I'm bowing out. The other option, usual thing we wouldn't necessarily think of. The Tirush V'Yitzer says, maybe he should listen. Why should he listen? Because the Gemara says, if you really want to impress Shammai, if you really want to get on God's good list, who is it who God really loves, says the Gemara in the Sefer Zgidim, Misach Rosh Hashanah? And they love him, V'Einam Ovin, Shomim Chepasim, V'Einam Yeshivim. People who are insulted and don't respond, people who hear their disgrace, they don't have to say anything back, that's a big source of brachas. Maybe your big grand will figure, I'll listen to this information. It's not going to hurt anyone because it's about me. And therefore, I will receive this bracha of Nelav and Vienna. Those are the two possibilities that Tirush Yitzhak was suggesting. So it could be that here again you find these two issues. But if the point is that Lashon Hara is about engaging in gossip, this negative trait, so then you should say, sorry, the whole conversation can't take place. But if it's about damaging people, so maybe there's some room for him to say, well, it's about me, I can stop it from damaging anybody, therefore maybe I'll go for this bracha of Nelarim V'mel Movim, maybe I'll seek out that opportunity. So it parallels the same two possibilities that we see in the Chafetz Chaim and Rav Sherpa, these same two options as to what's going on in terms of how do we understand the prohibition of Lashon Hara. So this topic is very relevant. It's very important to understanding one of the major complexities in the laws of Lashon Hara, and it's very relevant to the subject that Schwartz was discussing, the fact that we know that there are times that not only is it not prohibited to speak Lashon Hara, but it's actually an obligation. We know that there are times when I have to relate what I know, and that's when the information is relevant to the protection of a third party, protection of somebody else. So we know that not only am I not forbidden to relate the information, but I'm obligated to. And this is really where so much of the complexity of the laws of Lashon Hara lies, because there is a tremendous amount of judgment in knowing when it's one category and when it's the other category. Are we talking about something that is strictly prohibitive, or are we talking about something that is completely obligatory? So that's a big question. This is where all the judgment comes into play. And it's an interesting question just in a theoretical level. So how does it work? How has it come to be that something that's normally prohibited is now obligatory? What are those canons? Just to understand the concept. And the truth is, the two possibilities that we've been saying so far give us also two possibilities to understand how this idea works. This is known in halacha as toelis, which would literally mean purpose. If you have a purpose in what you're saying, if it's going to protect someone, so then it becomes obligatory, that becomes an obligation to say, lashon hara l'toelis. So what is the nature of that license, that obligation? So on the one hand, we could say that it comes from understanding lashon hara as a quality, understanding it as a personality trait. That the idea would be that I'm not permitted to gossip about people, I'm not allowed to talk about people negatively for no reason. But if I have a reason, if I'm doing it for a higher purpose, I'm doing it to protect someone else, so then that's simply not in the definition. That's simply not called lashon hara at all. Maybe that doesn't enter into the whole equation. Lashon hara is, by its very definition, when I'm gossiping about people for the sake of gossip, for the sake of negativity. If I'm doing it for positive reasons, I'm doing it to protect somebody else, maybe that's not even included in the whole concept of lashon hara. Or alternatively, I could say differently. I could say the lashon hara is not defined as a character trait. It's defined as hurting someone through speech. So if so, when I speak lashon hara l'toelis, am I hurting someone through speech? Absolutely. This is the case where I'm for sure hurting them through speech. I'm making sure that they're not going to get a business deal, they're not going to get a shidduch. That's the epitome of hurting them through speech. So how does it become permitted? How is it that this clear act of lashon hara becomes obligatory? Because we are balancing two values. Because we also have a prohibition of lo samor al dam re'acha, that we're not allowed to stand idly by when someone else is at risk. And when we say al dam re'acha, we don't only mean that they're going to be killed. We don't only mean dam in the extreme sense. The Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos explains that dam is both physical, and also we know the Torah and the Gemara uses dam to mean money, so it means both material risk, it means any kind of physical risk. So any kind of emotional risk, you know that somebody's at risk in any sense of the word, so we're prohibited from standing back and letting it happen. So it could be that we have here a clash. On the one hand, it is a prohibition of lashon hara, it is an act of hurting someone through speech, but it's outweighed by the fact that there is a potentially innocent victim, that there's a third party who's at risk, and the needs of this innocent party outweigh the needs of the person who I'm speaking to. And perhaps in order to make this point, as some Svarim point out, these two ideas are in the same pasuk. The Torah tells us in Parshas Kedoshim, Lo Seilech Rachel B'Amecha, V'lo Samar Al Dam Re'ach. It's as if to say, on the one hand, don't speak lashon hara about people, but don't take that to the extent that you're going to stand by if somebody's at risk. If you have the opportunity to save somebody from harm, then you have to say what needs to be said. So it could be that that's what's going on, that the mechanics of toelis is that we have this balancing act between, on the one hand, not hurting the person we're talking about, and on the other hand, protecting a potential victim of the third party. So that really is where this very complicated balancing act takes place, this very difficult judgment call as to where is the greater good, and that seems to perhaps underlie a lot of the issues that we find with toelis. And that could perhaps... There's a ruling, or it's not really even a ruling, it's a suggestion that the Chafetz Chaim has. In one place, the Chafetz Chaim has a footnote, and he has a suggestion there which he's not conclusive on. And it provoked a lot of debate. Later, Svarim called into question this ruling or this suggestion. We didn't think it was correct. The Chafetz Chaim himself wasn't sure about it. And it perhaps shows a little bit about this balancing act. The Chafetz Chaim suggests that, let's say you're in a store, and you see somebody who's about to purchase something. And it's not that they're going to be robbed. It's not that they're going to be overcharged to a ridiculous degree. But you want them to know that across the street they could get a better deal. They could do better if they would shop in the other store. So the Chafetz Chaim is concerned that there might be a prohibition of lashon hara to tell this person that he could get a better deal in the other store. And later Svarim questioned this. They said, what are you talking about? It's not very safe for the Shubas of Yashve. Is the truth about this? This seems to be straight toelis. You're trying to help the customer get a better deal. you should be permitted to be able to tell them what they need to know in order to be able to be a better cousin. How could this be a prohibition of Lashon Hara? So the whole discussion what the Chafetz Chaim meant, did he necessarily conclude this way? There's a lot of analysis of this suggestion. But it could be that what the Chafetz Chaim is addressing here is that maybe he sees here a clash between Lashon Hara and Lo Samad al Damrei Afra. He's saying that yes, the general rule is that if you're protecting somebody from harm, so that overrides the prohibition of speaking badly against the one who would do that harm. But what if it's not such a clear-cut case of a person really damaging somebody else? What if it's just a question of possible benefit, and what if it's a minor benefit? So what if this person could save a dollar by going to another store, but at the same time, by conveying that information, you will create the impression that this store overcharges, this store is too expensive, and everyone's going to stop going to that store, and this person is going to lose all of his living, and it's going to have a tremendous impact on him. So maybe it's not worth it. So maybe each case requires its own balance, its own analysis, and maybe that's what the Chafetz Chaim is perhaps alluding to. And again, even that much was questioned by later poskim, and it's not clear that Chafetz Chaim himself even thought that for a conclusion. But that issue may show that perhaps there is this question at stake here, how exactly do we balance these two values? So these two perspectives, whether we see it as a personality trait, or whether we see it as an issue of hurting someone through speech, so this could affect a number of other questions in this area of Toelos. For example, I have a friend whose name is Moshe Goldberg. So Moshe Goldberg speaks a tremendous amount of Lashon Hara. He does it all the time. And it's really messed up his life pretty badly. Really, he's had a bad time because of it. And he should serve as a lesson to us all not to be that way, not to speak Lashon Hara, because we see that it has a terrible impact on people's lives. So, of course, I'm making this up. This is not a real Moshe Goldberg. I'm sure you do know Moshe Goldberg. It's not a real Moshe Goldberg. I wouldn't really use somebody's name to talk about how they speak Lashon Hara. But sometimes you feel the need to do that. Sometimes people, teachers, others, want to make a point by talking about a real-life person and conveying what they've done. And there, posts can discuss. So is that a prohibition of Lashon Hara? So here I'm motivated by chinuch, or I'm motivated by inspiration, or whatever it is, some positive goal. And I'm speaking badly about someone. So one could suggest that this should again depend on these two possibilities. That what is it exactly that we're looking at here? Are we looking at the quality of being a gossip, the negative trait of talking about people? See, if so, I could argue that in this case I'm not gossiping. I'm trying to inspire, I'm trying to warn, I'm trying to educate. So maybe that shouldn't be included in a prohibition of Lashon Hara. On the other hand, if the issue is that we're talking about hurting someone through speech, so then this is hurting that person, even if my goal is not negativity, my goal is to educate or to inspire. A related question, we'll see in a second why it's related. There is an issue that the post can consider. Kfal Yisrael has already passed on this issue. The Minhag has already taken root. But if you look in the literature, the post are not so sure about this question. But the question would be, what if you speak Lashon Hara about somebody, but you don't mention their name? Now, we're not talking about a situation where you can figure out who we're talking about. That, for sure, is considered to be just as bad as mentioning the name. But let's assume, and sometimes it's not an accurate assumption, let's assume that you really can successfully conceal the identity of who you're speaking about. So on this issue, Klal Yisrael has assumed that it's mutter to say anything about anybody as long as you don't say who you're talking about. But the literature is a tshuva about this, and the tshuva Sasori is tshuva, it was a descendant of Sam Sofer. Not everyone is so sure this is the case. That sometimes some posts can lean towards thinking that even if you don't mention somebody's name, it may still be a prohibition of Lashon Hara. So perhaps that issue also reflects this question. That if the issue is that you don't want to hurt someone through speech, okay, so names have been changed to protect ability. And if the issue is that you don't want to indulge in negativity, you shouldn't be a person who likes to gossip. So this is also a way of gossiping. So you're leaving up a name, sometimes that makes it more tantalizing. Sometimes like the newspapers will say, oh, a certain famous person did such and such, and that's who it is. That's also something that cultivates this sense of gossip. Maybe one could argue that should also be prohibited as far as the need of Lashon Hara, even though the one who is being talked about is not being identified. Now we could combine these last two points. And we could ask, so what if a rabbi or a rabbi who's speaking to a shul wants to warn people about something, about a certain character trait, or wants to educate, the example we mentioned before, but does it without mentioning any names. He says that, I know a certain person who engaged in type of behavior and it caused them problems. He doesn't say he was talking about. So one could argue that should be permissible according to both reasons. Because here he's protecting the identity of who he's talking about. And his intention is not to be gossipy. His intention is for positive purposes. It's for the purpose of chinuch or inspiration or whatever it is. So one could argue that both bases are covered at that point, and that should be permissible. There are many other issues which are affected by this question. One that's particularly relevant to this time of year as we approach Rosh Hashanah coming up very quickly. So there is a question that's very, very relevant, a very major debate that took place on this point concerning the laws of Lashon Hara. So an older contemporary of the Chafetz Chaim is the famous Gaon Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who was known for founding the Muslim movement, for pushing everyone around him to work more carefully on questions of character. And one would think that the Sefer Chafetz Chaim is right up his alley. This is a Sefer that he for sure would have been very supportive of. And that seems to be the case. There are many indications that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was very admiring of Sefer Chafetz Chaim. Some story in particular where you see this. Nonetheless, despite that being the case, despite the fact that he was very admiring of this Sefer, there's a story that's recorded in a number of Sfarim that the Chafetz Chaim asked him to put it in writing, asked him to endorse the Sefer, to write the Haskalah, as we see. We open Sfarim, so often there's a letter or a number of letters in the beginning of the Sefer from more well-known rabbis saying this is worth reading. So Yisrael Salanter was asked to write a Haskama for the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. And according to the story, which again is in print in many sources, he declined. Didn't want to write a Haskama. Why not? So he said there's one ruling in this Sefer, this wonderful Sefer, there's one ruling which he doesn't agree with. And he's afraid that if he would write a Haskalah, people would think that he's coming to endorse that rule. So the students asked him, so Rebbe, write the Haskalah anyway. And you'll put a footnote there on page 342 or something I disagree with. So he responded, nobody reads the Haskalahs anywhere. So they're not going to actually look at the words. They'll see my stationery. They'll see that I'm endorsing the Sefer. And they'll assume that I endorse every word of it. This ruling I can't do. So what was this earth-shattering ruling? What was this one paragraph in the Chafetz Chaim that despite the great reverence he had for the Sefer, we couldn't endorse it because of this one rule? So it's a case we can call, for illustration purposes, we'll call it the case of Job. Job's a very happy man. Job is sitting at home, has a nice, comfortable easy chair, has a widescreen TV, has a big bag of pretzels, a big bottle of soda. He's a very comfortable, happy person. His phone rings. See his caller ID. He sees it's his best friend Bob. Great. All the better. His good friend is calling. He's even happier. Calls up. Bob says, Joe, I got to talk to you. I have a problem. I'm taking these classes in beginner's Judaism, learning a little bit about halacha, about Jewish law. So there's two things I learned. One is that apparently there's a prohibition called Lashon Hara. Not supposed to say bad things. I also learned that we're approaching Yom Kippur, and that when Yom Kippur comes, if you've done anything wrong to anybody, you have to ask him for forgiveness, you have to ask him for mechila. That being the case, I have a question for you, Joe. We've been friends for 20 years, we always hang out. You didn't know this, but during these 20 years, I've been telling people that I don't really like you, and I find you annoying, and I don't think your jokes are funny, and I only hang out with you because you pay for lunch. So I've been telling people this consistently. However, I'm really sorry. So I want you to know that I'm asking for mechila, I'm asking for forgiveness. Please be mochel. So Joe will probably forgive, but Joe's a nice guy. But I can guarantee you that when he hangs up the phone, he's much less happy than he was before he answered. So did Bob do the right thing by asking for mechila? So it's unclear. It sounds a little bit from the Chafetz Chaim, and there's some debate if he means this or not. There's a lot of literature about this. It sounds a little bit from the Chafetz Chaim, but yes, that's what has to be done. But you have this obligation to ask Mechila for Averus Ben Adam Mechavero. If you do something wrong to somebody else, you have to ask for forgiveness. Lashon Hara is an Averus Ben Adam Mechavero. Therefore, you have to ask Mechila, and even if doing so, you're going to cause that person pain, even if that's going to be a difficult experience. that Buddha. And the Bishwal Salanti thought, Chas V'Shalom, can't be. Can't be. It has to be that here we have a prohibition in the Torah of Onaz Tvarim. I'm not allowed to hurt somebody through words. So you're going to tell me that I'm going to rectify Lashon Hara by hurting the person worse? I'm going to tell him about something he didn't know and therefore cause him actual pain? Can't be. Says Bishwal Salanti, this can't be the case, and he disagreed with this rule. And again, there's much literature about what the Chofetz Chaim meant in this extreme example we portrayed. It's a little bit of an open question. It does seem to be that the weight of later psak seems to side with Bishwal Salanti on this question. It says, I believe in the Art Scroll book about Bishwal Salanti, that Aaron Cutler had advocated this ruling and said that even though the Chofetz Chaim's ruling was based on earlier sources, it was based on Rabbeinu Yonah, Rishon, Bishwal Salanti, nonetheless, Aaron Cutler reportedly said that Bishwal Salanti was of such a stature he could argue on Rishon. He could go back and argue on Rabbeinu Yonah. So the problem is, it's not a kulu, we should understand. It's not necessarily a leniency, because Bishwal Salanti is not simply saying that you're off the hook. He's saying that you don't have a way to fix this. You don't really have a process of mechila that you can go through. So what do you do? There's a lot of literature about that. So some suggest that there really is no answer. So an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. This is a good idea to avoid, because it's hard to fix after the fact. Others suggest that there may be other side ways of doing it. Normally, the way it's written in Shulchan Aruch is that when you have this obligation to ask for mechila, so you're supposed to really be specific. You're supposed to say that 2 weeks ago I punched you in the nose, and now I realize that was probably not a good thing to do, so would you please forgive me? And be specific and genuine. And what we have today, that everyone kind of runs around on autopilot before Yom Kippur and says, Yomochemi, 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 is really not what's described in Shulchan Aruch. But there are those who suggest, and under letters far and right, that this may have some utility, because we have this issue, how do we deal with the Lashon Hara problem? So since you can't always tell people what you did in that case, so the fact that people happen to go around and everyone kept say, are you both of me, are you both of me, that could perhaps include this as well. Which means you have to do it at the right time. You call a person up the day after Purim, and you say, by the way, are you both of me, and you know where. So he'll realize that you probably got a little out of control Purim night. So you have to be careful when you do this, but that's how some sort of suggest that you should do this at a time when it's understood that everyone's going around asking for mechila. Here in Chicago, especially, appreciation for the name of Aaron Soloveitchik. Aaron Soloveitchik, one of the svarim that was printed of his Torah, so he suggested, he also relates this whole story of Bishwal Salanti from his time, from the places where it's brought down. And he writes there that you really cannot ask mechila, so therefore what you have to do is you have to try to counteract the damage. So you cause some of the problems by speaking badly about them, so you have to try to outweigh that with positivity. Now that's famously difficult. That's the whole story we all know about. It's very hard to undo the damage. Nonetheless, that's how we understood that asking mechila is not really an option. You have to try to counteract it some other way and try to undo the problem more directly. So in any case, this whole dispute, this whole debate that we have seems to perhaps also reflect these two possibilities. That maybe Rabbi Yisrael Salanter understood that the problem with Lashon Hara is that you're hurting people through speech. So if that's the case, for sure it wouldn't make sense to try to fix it by hurting them with more speech. Certainly to hurt somebody with words would be counterproductive as a way to try to atone for hurting someone with words. But if we take a different view, that maybe it's about the negativity, maybe it's about a certain character trait, so maybe we could understand where the Chofetz Chaim is coming from, at least in some formulation, in that trying to fix the relationship, trying to come back to this person and apologize, even though it's going to be a painful experience, maybe from a perspective of reversing that mito, maybe we can understand it. Maybe we can see somewhere where it's coming from. In any event, so we're just about almost out of time in a few minutes. So what do we see here? We see essentially that we have two different possibilities. We have, on the one hand, the understanding of Lashon Hara, that it's about hurting someone through speech. In action. On the other hand, we could see it as a quality trait, we could see it as a type of negativity, as a type of nastiness, as a personality characteristic. And the truth is, we understand that the two nourish each other, there's a synergy between the two. That the more you're going to engage in this type of behavior, so the more it's going to create that kind of personality. And the more you strengthen that kind of personality, the more likely you are to engage in conversation that's going to hurt you. And it's not a coincidence that they both connect to each other in that way. Last week's parasha, 2 weeks ago at this point, in Parashas Kiseisa, so we read about the prohibition, a mitzvah. There is a mitzvah to remember what happened to Miriam. The story about Miriam, she spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe. So there's a mitzvah, the Torah tells us in Parashas Kiseisa to remember. And the Ramban understands in his commentary to Chumash that this is a real mitzvah. It's one of the 613 commandments to remember what happened to Miriam. The Rambam doesn't list it, and the Ramban in his glosses, and the Rambam criticizes him for this. The Ramban has a title where he says that the mitzvahs the Rambam forgot. The mitzvahs the Rambam left out, so the Ramban says he forgot them. So it's ironic, one of the mitzvahs he claims he forgot is the mitzvah of remembering, Miriam. So why do we have a mitzvah to remember Miriam? So Ramban explains, because we want to avoid Lashon Hara, so we should remember what happened to Miriam so that we should stay away from Lashon Hara. But we need more of an explanation, because there are many prohibitions in the Torah. And it's certainly not the case that every prohibition in the Torah also has a story about somebody who violated the prohibition, and a mitzvah to remember the story. So why is Lashon Hara so lucky? Why is Lashon Hara so singled out that we have the story of Miriam and then a mitzvah to remember the story of Miriam, and that's also part of halacha? Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Sher was the Mashgiach of the Slabodki Yeshiva and his Sichos Musar. So he noted the following. But the Rambam, when he lists all the different types of Lashon Hara, so there was a type called Avak Lashon Hara, kind of second degree Lashon Hara, the dust of Lashon Hara. So if I say something nasty about someone, that's Lashon Hara. Says the Rambam, if I say something nice about someone, and it comes out in a nasty way, it comes out damaging, that's a vak lashon. Says Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Sher, I can say, it's not fair. What do you want from me? You tell me not to be nasty, so I'll try not to be nasty. But if I'm trying to be nice, that's the whole point. I thought I was saying something good. And it came out in a way that ended up causing damage. So by definition, I didn't know that was going to happen. So how could you tell me I'm engaged in a vak lashon hara? There's no way to avoid that. Says Rabbi Sher, that's the whole point. It's the mitzvah of remembering my Samaritan. Because Lashon Hara is too complicated a prohibition. And it's not the kind of thing you can figure out at the last moment. It's not the kind of decision you can make on the fly without seriously considering how your speech impacts people. And the only way you're going to be successful in the arena of Lashon Hara is if you think about this topic and you study it and you ponder it and you try to understand all of the ups and downs and all of the ins and outs of how people respond to things and how your words impact, then you have a chance. And to remind us of that point, so we look at the story of Miriam. Miriam is a tzaddikah, it's one of our great role models in history. And of course, Miriam meant well. And still, Miriam is nechshol lashon hara. So the only way we have a chance is if we remember that. We remember this great figure in history and her great intentions. And even so, there was an issue of lashon hara. Only through constantly thinking about things like that and working on this concept do we have a chance that we'll be able to be successful, that what we say won't be Lashon Hara or Avak Lashon Hara. And this is a concept you find in halacha in many places, one of my favorite concepts to talk about. So we have a practice Friday night when we make Kiddush. We have a practice, we cover up the challahs when we make Kiddush. The Talmud Yerushalmi has 3 reasons why we do this. Yerushalmi has other reasons. One of the most interesting reasons that's offered is that we don't want to embarrass the challah. That here, a challah was a candidate for the kiddush. Instead, we usually choose to make kiddush on the wine instead. So we don't want the challah to see that we're going to make kiddush on the wine, so we cover up the challah. It's a very difficult idea. So I'll tell you a secret. The challah will get over it. And what you do to the challah 5 minutes later is much worse. The notion that you're protecting the challah by covering it up for that minute, it's hard to understand. Unless we understand that what we're talking about, when we're dealing with people's emotions, and we're trying not to embarrass human beings, it's not something you can do in on-the-job training. The only way you're going to have the proper sensitivity is if you practice, is if you take every opportunity to try to develop the sensitivity, try to cultivate this instinct, And every scenario that you see in life that you can practice, that you can use to train this type of mindset, you take that opportunity. They say that, I don't know if it's true or not, but they claim that when Irvine Cutler used to live on the Upper West Side and he used to be driven to Lakewood, so he would tell his driver when he was going through the toll booth that he should go specifically to the toll booth that was manned rather than the automatic one, because his understanding was that the person who's running the toll booth, the man in the toll booth, is going to feel bad to be passed over for a machine. He's going to be offended by that. And that could be true or could not be true. But that type of sensitivity comes from someone who covers his followers, comes from someone who is constantly practicing, constantly considering all these scenarios, and looking how does a human being respond to this type of a situation. And interestingly enough, we don't have time to go into it now, there's quite an extensive literature on the various scenarios that could play out in terms of covering your challahs in Kiddush and the types of ways in which that could influence actual human interaction. So to hear the message of remembering Miriam is that we have to, if we're going to be able to confront the incredibly complex questions, the very tricky issues of how do we balance what we can say and what we have to say, when is it crucial to relate information and when is it really wrong, when is it too much and when is it not enough, the only way we're going to be successful is if we continue to study this topic, to continue to think about the various possibilities, and we continue to practice. And perhaps this is what Rashi is telling us in the beginning of Parsha Shlach. Rashi is saying the Meraglim are criticized with an extra oomph because they should have learned the lesson from Miriam. He's not saying that it's a Kal V'chomer, that what they did is worse than Miriam. The Gemara is telling us the Kal V'chomer, that what Miriam did is about a person is worse than talking about the land. But Rashi's message in Parsha Shlach is that the lesson of Miriam is that if it can happen to her, the rest of us have to start practicing. The rest of us have to start training our sensitivities. We have to start covering our challahs. We have to start looking for every opportunity to cultivate this type of personality that's not going to be negative. And what happens? The Meraglim, right on the heels of this incident, they run and they speak badly about the land of Israel. They missed the whole point. They lost the whole message of learning from the story of Miriam. But not to say that it's the kind of a homer from that story, but to say that the whole message of the story of Miriam is that we have to practice, we have to work, and particularly in this time as we approach Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we have to work to create an elevated personality, a type of perspective and understanding of how these concepts and how these laws work, so that at the moment of challenge, we'll make the right decisions. Just to very quickly, we capitally spoke about that already over time. We spoke about this idea that there's two different ways to understand the prohibition of Lashon Hara. On the one hand, it could be understood as a personality trait. On the other hand, it could be understood as hurting someone through speech. We saw some cases where that might make a difference. The idea that the Mara can talk about things that are already public knowledge. Sounds like even if it's bad, Tosfos says no, only if it's positive Lashon Hara, then you can speak about it if it's public knowledge, perhaps reflecting these two possibilities. We saw the question of what does it mean not to receive Lashon Hara. The Chafetz Chaim says it means you can't believe it at all, apparently reflecting the Amida understanding, or Shter Bach understanding that it's meaning you can't allow someone to get damaged because of what you heard, seeing it as hurting someone through speech. We saw how that affects the Tewish and Yitzhar's question. If you're going to speak Lashon Hara to somebody about them and you don't know that it's them, how should they respond? We saw the question, how do we understand this idea of Torelis, this idea that you have to speak Lashon Hara when it's for a purpose. Is it because it's simply not the quality of Lashon Hara because it's not motivated by negativity? Or is it that it is Lashon Hara, you're hurting the person you're speaking about, but it's outweighed by Lo Samar Adam Re'acha in the same pasuk that you shouldn't let somebody be damaged if you have the ability to make a difference? We saw this balancing act might perhaps be behind the controversial pasuk of Chafetz Chaim, that maybe you shouldn't tell somebody who's shopping in a store that he can do better elsewhere, maybe it doesn't way out in the balance to make sense of that, considered to be enough for Torelis. We considered the question of what if you want to speak about somebody in order to inspire or to educate? Does that justify it? If it's the leader, maybe so. If it's damaging someone through speech, probably not. What if you speak about people without mentioning their names? Again, either it's a case where you're not hurting anybody because nobody knows who you're talking about, but it is a negative quality of Lashon Hara. We combine those two cases. What if you want to inspire people by talking about somebody without mentioning their name? Maybe that should mutter according to both opinions. Then we talked about the whole controversy with the Chafetz Chaim and Rasul Salanter, because the Chafetz Chaim sounds like, depending on how you understand it, that you have to ask Mechila from somebody if you spoke Lashon Hara about them, even if they don't know about it. Schlossnachter thought that was an impossibility. We saw a couple of suggestions how you could accommodate in the Schlossnachter view. Either best of all, try to avoid Lashon Hara to begin with, or try to take advantage of the generic Mechila Erev and Kippur, or try to counteract it without actually asking for actual Mechila. And we suggested that here these two possibilities again reflect the Chofetz Chaim coming from the perspective of trying to bridge this gap, trying to fix this Migla, while we're also out there seeing it as an issue of not hurting someone through speech, and therefore it wouldn't make sense to hurt them again. And we talked about this question of the mitzvah to remember Miriam. Why do we have such a mitzvah? Apparently in order to realize that we can't act in the moment without properly training ourselves beforehand. There's a concept, for example, of lack of Lashon Hara, even if we mean well when we say something, it comes out badly. It's still going to be considered lack of Lashon Hara, teaching us that we have to actively work and practice this. And perhaps that's the Pshat and Rashi in the beginning of Shlach, when Rashi said the Meravim should have learned from Miriam, not to tell us that what they did was worse, but to tell us that the whole message of Miriam is that we have to practice and train ourselves. And that is a particular urgent theme as we approach the Yom Noroim, this need to create a personality that is in line, that is in sync with the values that the Torah is emphasizing so strongly. Thank you so much.
I want to thank Rabbi.